Go ahead and get rolling, everybody. Thank you so much for coming out to your Voice 200. This is the last session of our day prior to Ask the Experts and our link feedback sessions happening this evening, both of which will have food. As a result, I hope that everyone here is punchy and ready to interact, because this is a slightly different kind of session that we're going to do. So what I'm going to do is talk a little bit about what's going on in this session. I'm going to give some introductions, and then we're going to kind of open it up. Does everybody have question cards? Question cards? No, everyone's looking at me wacky. So if you feel like, as we're having this conversation, asking a question, you have the microphone here, you have your question card, you can wave that, and I'll run around and pick that up, because this is a unique panel-style discussion. I want to back up actually just real quick. I've had the fortunate ability to help guide the content at Link Conference, which means that if there is content at the conference that you particularly don't agree with or that you think is missing, I'm ultimately the one that's responsible for that. And in the genesis of doing said content, I was thinking about, I want to bring together my favorite people in the company who have been thinking about helping customers kind of make their voice journey. I want to bring them all together, and I want to be able to have just an open conversation and be able to have you all in the audience be able to participate with us and to talk as in a lot of the ways that we do inside the organization and in our, you know, very frequent opportunities to converse. So, you know, this really is different. We're not going to have a whole bunch of slides. This is about you guys and what topics you want to throw to us. And I have a whole bunch of seriously amazing people to be able to introduce. The first is Mr. Tamor Hussein. I'm actually pulling their profiles off of my link. And I first want to thank all of my panelists for completing their MyLink profile. You'll notice that Tamor's happens to be a little bit empty, but I was able to find something on the internet about Tamor that you may not be aware of. Tamor is representing our consulting organization. He is in our center of excellence, and one of his roles is to help giant customers figure out how to move from where they are today to where they need to be with Link Voice, and he comes to that with a pedigree that is a four-digit CCIE number. And for those of you that aren't aware, CCIEs, the Cisco Certified Very Important Engineers, are sequentially numbered. And so Tamor, got his CCIE so long ago and is so on top of it that he is actually in the Hall of Fame for CCIEs as a four-digit guy there. So I want to thank Tamor for joining us again from our services organization. Raj is joining us from sales. Raj actually came from a background of doing SBCs back way before they were cool, and found a fantastic home here at Microsoft. And actually, I sit on a call that's led by Raj every week, where we sit around and help customers avoid making future investments with Cisco, shall we say. And we just have a fantastic time doing it and walking through lots of very difficult, you know, sometimes technology questions, sometimes interoperability questions. And so Raj gets to be here, as does Amr as well from our sales organization. If you've ever had any conversations with Amr, you know that he is never at a loss for words. And so one of the things that I have in my remit here is to ensure that all of our panelists have an opportunity to share. But Amr just has been doing this session called Common Questions and Concerns About Link. And if you missed it earlier, please go back, about Link Voice specifically. And if you missed it earlier, please go back and listen to the recording, because he really does iterate through everything from multiple call control planes to CAC to codecs to bandwidth, and does it in a way that I think is both highly technical in its depth and also, you know, very, very consumable. So it's just you know, completely honored here. And then finally, our veteran in this group is Francois. Francois, Francois actually has been at Microsoft now 10, is that right? A little bit more than 10 years, yeah. And is actually our representative from our engineering organization. And while within our engineering organization, again, Francois's primary role is to help giant customers move forward with Link Voice, and has been doing so way before we had such fancy features as E911 or call admission control or packet marking or any of the real kind of rich sophistication that we have today in the Link product line. Was doing so back in the 2007 days, way you know, back in history, helping customers move on to this place of being able to see a vision going forward for Link and for enterprise telephony. And then finally, myself, I happened to take Francois' job in the Link marketing organization when he was raptured up to engineering. So when Francois got the big promotion and the big pay raise, I came in and tried to, you know, in my meager manner, fill his giant shoes. I look after voice interoperability and networking with Link. I've been doing so for a little while. I was, you know, back in the 2007 days, plugging PBXs together and making them call one another and talking about RT audio and all sorts of different things. And so this is a group of folks that, again, I say from the bottom of my heart are seriously my favorite people in Microsoft when it comes to helping customers think about voice and telephony. And I am honored to have you all here. So please come on up on the stage and let's have some fun. So the idea behind this is to throw it open to you all, and so we've got, I'm gonna kind of act as the role of a moderator and have my microphone. I'm gonna give my thoughts a little bit. Tamor is the one who is currently holding the microphone. We can kind of pass it back and forth.
I'm not giving it.
and again, you know, this is designed to, you know, just kind of be open and unmediated and to be able to have a really frank conversation about what it takes to move from where you are today to where you want to be with regards to Link Voice. And in fact, I think there's going to be partly the reason that I chose this August group is not only are you my favorite people, but I think we do disagree in a lot of respects, because we come from different backgrounds and we help different customer types, and there's a lot of ways to skin the cat, as it were. And so I think I hope that we'll have an opportunity just to share all of our experiences of helping out customers. I threw up on the slide there the set of things that literally came from our last sets of conversations that we had as a group. Although Francois was traveling in Asia at the time, helping a series of customers deploy Link Voice in Japan, Amr was traveling in the Middle East, helping a series of customers deploy Link Voice throughout, I believe, Dubai and a few other areas. And it was stunning that I actually had Tamor, who is based in Dubai, to be sitting right next to me in Redmond, which rarely happens. So anyway, you know, you can kind of, this is a little bit of a seeding of a variety of different topics. And I know the way these things typically go, that nobody wants to actually be the brave one to ask the first question or to broach the topic, but oh, there is somebody, yes!
Too many volunteers already.
Ooh, and it's even written down. Tamor, read the first question.
The question from Alexis is, will Link ever be able to emulate traditional PBX call control concepts like shared lines plus bridged appearances?
And when, so Tamor is going to read the question and not even go for it. And I'll start. I think that, yeah, the answer is an unequivocal yes, right? And there is a significant amount of capability that's already there in the product for being able to do delegation support and being able to do shared line appearance, whether it's on a whether it's on the link-rich client or whether you have it in a phone that comes from vendors like Snom and Polycom and so forth, to a certain extent, we have those features coming from that partner community because they can kind of innovate on these things and drive the phone models and the phone form factors and so forth a little bit faster than we can in some cases. But the core kind of call control and functionality of that is absolutely there. One of the things that's interesting is that there are actually now lots of customers who have this facility and this capability up and running. Holland & Knight, for those of you that were listening to the keynote, fairly decent-sized law firm, have a lot of these requirements, right? Are having secretaries and bosses and admins and so forth being able to do a lot of those calls. So I'm going to stop talking because I want you all to talk.
I have a small pet peeve in this general area. And I'm going to use an extreme example to reflect that. Essentially, I was at a customer, you know, a little while back, and they asked me, well, you know, we have on our Cisco phones, we have these buttons, and each button corresponds to a line. So what is your equivalent? And I didn't really understand what they were trying to get at. And I asked, why do you need an equivalent? And I said, well, how are we going to make more than one call at a time or receive more than one call at a time? And the point I'm trying to make, it's an extreme example because we've moved on from that world in the Cisco space as well, but the point I'm trying to make is the technology empowers you to perhaps change the way you've been doing things as well. So think about things like IAM and presence and how that really affects how you see people and when they're available and so on. So I have a little bit of a pet peeve. I agree with Jamie that there's a lot of coverage to be provided. And actually, I think a lot of the things that you've mentioned around shared lines and bridge appearances, if you map them to use case scenarios, we deliver a lot of that functionality today as well. So I encourage us to think about use case scenarios versus, you know, just the features.
Go ahead.
My answer to that is going to be yes and no. And this is where you're going to see the disagreement within the group. Yes, absolutely, like Jamie said, for somebody who requires an IP phone and requires the traditional features of what a PBX would deliver. But I would say no, you know, from the perspective of somebody who is a modern knowledge worker who did not have a mobile device sitting next to them, right? You know, when these features were relevant in the PBX world, you needed the same appearance in multiple locations. You needed the same line in somebody's desk and in the lab out there, right? You didn't have the device explosion come into the enterprise, right? Folks were mostly desk-bound, which is why they wanted to be present at desk A and desk B. But now, with the explosion of devices coming to the mix, and you want a single number reach capability and calls to follow you no matter where you are, the way in which shared line appearance is actually delivered is different than how it's done in the conventional PBX world. Right.
And so that's even more the case if you think of distributing to mobile devices, which are extremely individual,
correct,
or having that type of combined experience.
Absolutely. And I've sat in a number of sessions today, all the way starting from the keynote down to individual sessions. You've started seeing, you know, the metrics and data and numbers around how many devices people, you know, carry and how much time people spend away from their desk and whatnot. So it really bubbles up the question of, is this relevant anymore? Or at the very least, is it relevant to 100% of your enterprise population, which is so used to be the case, right, 10 years ago, and then you decide upon what are the characteristics upon which you're going to build your UC strategy. Is it something that's going to be built on what caters to the needs of 10% of your enterprise or 90% of your enterprise, and then you just optimize around what the common case scenario is. So yes and no.
So just for the bravery of your question, I'm going to give you $10 because you were the first question of this session. $10,
wow.
And there will be another $10.
Should we move on to question number two?
I don't think that's
and question number two is $20.
Nobody's telling anybody. I'm actually, yeah.
So and I got a few more.
There you go. All right.
So I've got actually two questions. And actually, there, you must
$30.
Jamie, you and I must have talked like a couple of years ago about some of these things, but I'll bring them up anyway. So remote call control and video interoperability. And several other ones hit key points for my enterprise as well. But you know, we use remote call control today, and I've been hearing for years it's going to disappear, but yet it's still there. And I understand strategically where enterprise voice is going, where the push for that. But we have multiple IP PBX vendors, so to get to a third one or to have a really good interop is going to be a difficult story for us. So I want to understand your position, Microsoft's position on RCC. And number two, video interoperability. It's huge for us. We have video in all shapes and sizes and vendors, and making sure that does come together is great. So what I saw this morning was a tease, but I'd like to know more about what that means as far as the future goes for seamless video interoperability.
All right, no, I'll try my best on this. So I need to ask you a few clarifying questions before I can answer to that. First is that, did you attend my session this morning?
No, did not.
That's good. How many people were there in the session in the morning? So I want to make sure that what I'm repeating. All right, cool. So think in this term. First of all, what I said in the morning was that remote call control is a Microsoft term, which we use to hit an ugly baby, CTI, basically, right? So, well, it could be valid scenario. Think in these terms. I'm assuming the reason it's important to you is because you have overwhelming use case of desk-bound workers. People only work on the desk, right? So you don't have to bring your own device. You have not much any initiatives on remote worker scenarios or stuff like that. Now, once you have assumed that, then I'm also going to say that, okay, within that, how the user scenario pans out. So essentially, you punch in a number on a soft client, you hit call, and your desk phone goes off the hook, and you want to call. When I was working for a Swiss bank, when I offered this technology to the bankers, people were very excited. You know what? Within 1 month, my risk organization was all over me, because somebody who was an executive in FX markets, at the home, they took their laptop and their home, they attended an incoming call and their desk phone went off hook and so janitor was listening into it. So you see where I'm coming from? Point is, I think what you're interested is click to call functionality. You also want to make sure that the presence of that person is also captured, right? That's what it is. So I did talk about presence interoperability this morning as well, so I'm gonna try to summarize that for you. So click to call, when you look at the click to call, especially from the RCC realm, and the guy sitting next, right behind you, and I've done a lot of this together. Overwhelming majority of the scenario where people want to use is their PBX phone as a default audio conferencing device. It's actually click to join a conference is more, because the punching the number and making a point-to-point call is, you try one, two times, and then you want to say, I'm going to pick up the phone and dial it or whatever. Or I wanted a full-blown soft phone to begin with. That's there. That's been there from R2. And it's not only there, it's a very elegant way where I don't show up as Amir Kaleem and a 630725 number. I show up as Amir Kaleem with my right presence that people are consuming. Now, I've given that all argument. Even in spite of all that, you still have a use case scenario, then obviously, you have to look at that, okay, so I want to click to call, I want to have a presence. The presence piece comes from three main sources in my humble opinion. My calendar, my keyboard as mouse activity, and my phone, right? This thing. Now, my personal experience is that in a given 8 to 10 hours work day, half of the time I take calls on this, half of the time maybe desk phone. Actually, I don't have a desk phone, but just for argument, that's what it is. 90% of my presence to my presence server is coming from my calendar and my keyboard and mouse activity. About 10% is this. It could vary from you. It could be 15% or 20% for you. But nevertheless, it's just that BLF, the busy lamp field, which is coming from here. Out of that, half of could be my cell phone and half could be my desk phone. So if that for 5% you want to deploy that CTI-based technology today and do that, then maybe that's the need, that you have to have that complexity of integration of CTI, scalability, high availability, or that. What he has on slide, if you look at that, and interesting coming down the line, call via work. The whole this argument, RCC, sometimes is also used as a commercial reason for the sunk cost investment. The idea is that we have 10,000 of Aya phones or Cisco phones. I'm not going to throw them. We are not asking. We never have said rip and replace. We love you if you throw your PBXs because because that's a dead end architecture to begin with, in my humble opinion. But your sunk cost investments, we will allow you the capability from the software to have that click to call and the presence synchronized in a way that the user experience is there and you're not limited to CTI, to that pretty name and with the ugly baby. Did I answer your question?
Let me add one point from an engineering point of view on this, which is that I'm not going to tell you you don't need it, that's for you to decide, but we're very soon no longer going to offer it. So we have to think through the transition for all of us who might be using it. Now, the situation in your case might be that you use it. In recent times, Jamie and I and quite a few others have done inventories of those customers. There's very, very, very few customers remaining on RCC today. I would say fortunately. And, you know, as I was suggesting, very soon that's not going to be on the solution anymore.
After we touch on the second part of your question, which is around video interoperability, although we're officially talking about call control, I said it was unmediated and open season and blah, 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 so you're going to get this too. So you saw, everyone made it to the keynote, right? Okay, so what you saw there was a Tanberg VTC, I think it was an EX90, although we brought two different models out. That was hooked up to a pre-beta version of Link that's running the latest version that we've got out of engineering that effectively has a B2B UA running in it for video interop, right? So if you think about how mediation server is implemented as a back-to-back user agent, think about the video interoperability component implemented in the same fashion. So the VTC registers into Link through that B2B UA, and you get it represented in Link with presence, you're able to go and dial out to it, you're able to drag it into conference calls, you're able to have it go and join meetings through dial out, all sorts of different scenarios there. Clearly, Cisco has some of the same types of interoperability there with their VCS product, although VCS doesn't have the same level of support for Link meetings that we're planning on having with the release of the video interoperability server. We haven't announced the time frames for when that's coming out. I can expect that based on the quality that you saw today in the keynote, that things like TAP and early adopter betas and other elements like that are going to be coming up. Unfortunately, we don't have any, you can't sign up for TAP with us right now, but absolutely, if you're interested, if you have a bunch of legacy VTC equipment and you're interested in taking advantage of this, and could give us some great feedback that we can use to help make the product better, we're always looking for customers to help out on that front. Couple caveats on the capability there. They need to be SIP-based endpoints. So it's not an H323 stack that's running in the B2B UA. It's a SIP stack. So really old VTCs that don't do SIP aren't going to be able to work with this. We're going to test as many of these devices as we can, but with every additional device that we put into our test matrix, the amount of testing time that it takes grows exponentially. So at some point we want to have kind of both a set of internal testing that we're going to do and a set of kind of testing out of our partner engineering organization to be able to help that scale further. But that's a little bit further down the road right now. But yeah, we're super excited about what we could see with the VTCs. I personally, been tracking the progress of that product and kind of helping out with the keynote a little bit, and was stunned at just how straightforward and easy and it just worked. It was great. So tons of credit to our engineering organization. Can't wait to get it in the hands for everybody.
Hey Jamie, just in theory, that should be any H.264 device that supports SIP, correct?
Yeah, I mean that's the theory, right? So clearly we're looking to. I know, right? What we're trying to do is unblock customers that have legacy Tanberg and Cisco endpoints and making sure that they can take advantage of those endpoints while they transition to more modern conferencing solutions like LRS, et cetera. There's nothing that we're doing though that's unique to what Cisco has implemented, right? So there's no bit fields that Cisco does. It's different from everybody else generally. You kind of unpack the 264 stream and repack it, and it's all good. That being said, it's purely a matter of testing to uncover if that's the same case for first other endpoints outside of the ones that we're going to initially test from Cisco / Tamberg, and then second, from other vendors, from whomever, right? So, yeah. That help answer your question on video interrupt? Awesome. Anyone else have anything to add on video interrupt that I missed?
One quick comment about those of you who are in the phase of evaluating or thinking about RCC as a potential solution, just in full transparency, RCC is a PC-only solution, right? There is no support for RCC or the equivalent of it on a mobile device, right? So when enterprises like yours are putting mobile first as part of your UC strategy or any strategy for that matter, you know, I will encourage you to consider that, right, as you go through your decision process. And honestly, it was invented at a time when, you know, Link or OCS or LCS at that time did not have PBX capabilities, and we needed a way to pair with a PBX capable solution, right? But things have changed in the 10 years that have gone past since then, and I think we can pack much more value, right, in terms of what you spend towards RCC, especially with Call Via Work and all the mobile devices coming into the picture.
Are you saying RCC is so last decade? Is that what you just said?
It's pretty harsh. It's pretty harsh, Raj. So a couple of folks, I don't know if everyone's familiar with the concept of Call Via Work. This is a technology that originally came out when we had the 2010 mobile clients, right? So before we had a media stack on the mobile clients, we had the facility to be able to, with the mobile client, instantiate a call, have that call come back to your mobile client and actually ring on the PSTN / GSM dialer on the mobile client, and then you'd pick it up, and what you would hear is far end ringing, is you would hear that it's setting up that far end, and then the call would be connected, and it would look like you had called from your work number, but really what it was going on is mediation as a B2B UA was setting up a trombone call between two endpoints, one of those endpoints being your mobile device, and another one of those endpoints being your far end, right? The PSTN number that you're dialing. One of the things that we're looking at is seeing, are there other clients that we want to bring that capability to? If that's something that's super interesting to you, there's a great place for you to be right after this session, and that's the Link feedback sessions that are happening right after this at the same time as Ask the Experts. So if you've got questions, you go to Ask the Experts, get your questions answered, come to the feedback session, vice versa, either way. But there's a whole feedback session that we're doing on voice. And so if there's things that you want to see, like, hey, I want to do multi-tier delegation, or I want to be able to do this, you know, call via work type facility from the rich client, or I want to be able to, you know, have more Mac facility, or whatever the case may be, don't hesitate to come out, because we want to be able to capture all that feedback and capture your use cases. And so that's absolutely one that that we're actively investigating for a future release. And we got somebody ready for a question, so I'm going to give up the microphone.
Well, so it is video, it's still Viz related. So on the Viz topic, and so Viz is super exciting, and especially around Cisco Tamberg. But as we look at Polycom devices, and especially the Polycom devices that can register natively to Link already, so HDX group series that are going to be able to do H.264 SVC native into Link, that should be the focus for the Polycom devices instead of, you know, running it through Viz, right? Running it through a B2B UA, because you're going to add overhead, you're going to add delay into that product. So a lot like mediation and doing direct or media bypass with Polycom, with other devices, you want to continue to do that. So just a comment on that one, right?
Great point. Great point.
Absolutely. Anyone have a card? I'll read it.
Otherwise, we'll have to fill out our own cards. Here's a question right here. You want to step up to the mic for the recording? Thanks. We'll have to fill out our own cards, Jim.
Ken Lasko, everybody. Ken Lasko. Are you guys going to be keeping with Silverlight for the admin stuff for the next version, or you think is that going to go away?
I think Jamie should take that. By the way, you look very different, from your profile picture.
No, you know what? It's just smoking mirrors.
I was expecting some Baywatch.
The marketing guy gets to answer your question. I look after voice interop and networking. Don't have a lot of insight into what's going on with the admin side. Silverlight clearly was chosen for a whole set of reasons that we're looking at and going, no, do those reasons still hold true in a world where we're lots of cloud, right? Lots of hybrid, lots of split domain. I have some personal feelings on this. I personally think that an HTML5 based solution kind of makes a little more sense. But I don't think we've made any concrete decisions on that. And clearly we haven't announced anything yet. But if you have feelings on that, once again, I'm going to plug the link feedback sessions that are happening after this session at the same time as Ask the Experts. There'll be food and drink at both. And there's a whole session that's focused on the admin side that I think a lot of folks are going to be asking about, you know, additional parameters and PowerShell and things like that. And this is probably a good topic to bring up. So thanks, Kev.
Thank you.
And another thing, just to add on to that and mid side of things, it'd be better number management would be awesome.
Definitely be sure to
listen. I don't know how, but.
Well, thanks for that.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Feedback session.
Oh, yeah, we could hire him as a PM.
Another question.
Got to lower this. Do you have any contact center partners that integrate with Link Voice better than others? And are you allowed to name it?
Who wants it?
We all of our Link contact center partners are fantastic. The lucky thing for us is that some of them are here, so you can visit their booth and you can ask them about where their solution excels and what the features they focus on. But they're all fantastic partners for us, and we don't think that anyone is better than the other.
Very diplomatic.
No, that's actually the truth. I'm not diplomatic.
Well, you have to look at the contact center space. Yeah. Contact center space in the way I, you know, if it's four levels. You have contact center applications at high end, Genesys and Aspects of the world, which are call control independent, right? You will probably, if you're Sallie Mae's or United Airlines of the world, where you have 1,500 or 2,000 agents concurrent in a one workflow, you're probably gonna look at those. In our research, about 400 concurrent agents and below is 80% plus of the market, right? And that's what I shared in the morning as well in my session. And our current, as we speak, our contact center strategy is partner-led. We enable our partners, right? And we work with all these four levels, which I'm going to talk about. And actually, as part of that, if you look at this, we created another, you know, a federated concept of contact centers, which could be, so that whole cloud and manage and outsource is already there. But think in this term. The thing what I said this morning was important is that seasonality. For example, Christmas is coming, holiday season is coming, and you need to add agents. And maybe you have to add 100 or 200 or 50 agents. You go to, you know, your manpowers of the world and you say, hey, can you give us the agents? Then you start thinking about, you're gonna ship out the machines to them, you're gonna image the machine, put the credentials, you know, put the desktop, agent desktop, and ship it out and sort of thing. Not with Link. If I was you, I would say, bring your own device. Here is my Link credentials. Log in through federated Link. There you go. And I'm going to provision you as my contact center thing. So that's where the Clarity Connect, Zcom of the world, Altigens of the world come into the play. There's a whole bunch of them. ICE from computer. There's a whole bunch of them. So that's, if you look at, so first was, I say PBX independent. Second is PBX intertwined, or call control intertwined. That is Avaya or Cisco's of the world, although Cisco sometimes think that they are not, but this, you still need a Cisco call manager for that, and no. So what I'm trying to say is, I think what you should expect from Microsoft coming forward, and I probably may not have any concrete to share with you, but directionally, we should be able to, coming to the next releases of the Link Server, we should provide to our partners more scalable underlying architecture where we can build more scalable contact centers as well. So today in the marketplace, I think that 80% profile I spoke about, we are playing very well with our partners. And for the high-end contact centers, Genesys and Aspect are right in bed with us on their system.
Yeah, so I'm gonna summarize what Amir is saying. The contact center that's better than others for voice, or the right contact center, actually what I wanted to say was, the better contact center is the right contact center for you. So you heard Amir say all of those names, and certainly they have some advantages and some some things that'll be better for your organization depending on size, depending on functionality, depending on where you want to keep them, and so on.
Yeah, my last comment on contact center would be that I actually see them as a UC contact center or UC enabled contact center. When I was on the other side of the aisle, and when I was supporting server-based IP telephony at that time, so I would ask Nortel and Avaya, are you an IP PBX or you're IP enabled PBX? It's a trick question. You get it? What I just asked? So Nortel would say, oh, we are IP enabled PBX because we are ever greenfield. And I would say, sorry, I was looking for IP PBX. You see where I'm coming from? So the point is, if Link is not underlying call control, is not anchoring the call, then it's not a UC contact center. Be very careful, because multi-channel, all those remote workers, remote edge desktops, and all those capabilities you need looking for.
The last little plug that I'll make, since I'm the content guy at the conference, we have two awesome sessions that are all about, I know, right? It's a big surprise. They're all about Link and contact centers and attendant console type solutions. They are happening tomorrow. One of them is happening tomorrow at 2:45 in Copperleaf 7. It's on the platform track. So Plat 105 is apps for Link, contact centers. And then it is happening again Thursday, 10:45. And that is Plat 108. And the idea here is that all of the vendors that are here, we're going to bring them up and kind of have a demo fest. So you'll get a chance to, in a single session, to see somewhere in the neighborhood of four or five actual demos of real contact center solutions that are running on top of Link. And we originally had one session, and then we had too many partners and too many demos, and so we had to add a second one in order to account for all the goodness there. So, you know, one of the things, just from a pure market perspective, is that we're seeing the space go crazy. And we're really starting to see more and more customers start to think about how, and it's almost a second order sort of question, right? First, how do I think about Link from a call control perspective? And then how do I think about Link and my contact center from a call control perspective? In addition to Amr's comment around having some more, scalable, robust, et cetera, APIs, it's something we're always looking to do. I think the other piece that is really compelling is to think about how cloud-based contact centers could operate with on-premises Link, and how cloud-based Link could interoperate with on-premises contact centers, is to think about some of these more hybrid topologies. That's not something that we have today, but that is absolutely something that we're really deeply thinking about. Of how to enable those types of, fundamentally it starts to turn into a platform as a service or infrastructure as a service type of capability, but being able to have that type of flexibility from Link in the cloud domain. So I actually want to, I'm going to take control. Sorry, but Francois, you can have the first comment on this though. And it's the last one on this list here. It's kind of a topologies question. And I've got a session tomorrow morning that's kind of all about different topologies. But I'm just really interested, from this august panel, what are you guys seeing? Are you guys seeing people sitting Link behind the PBX? Are you seeing Link adjunct to the PBX? Are you seeing direct connections out to the PSTN? Are you seeing session management? And what are some of the factors that you're seeing that help to drive some of those decisions from customers? And I'll let Francois start.
I think it's very dependent on the scale of the customers and where they sit today. I am working with a number of very large customers that are in the migration, especially many Avaya customers, Avaya-based customers historically. And we've evolved a very functional model today, that migration and that coexistence, because we're talking about 3-4 years coexistence in those situations. Even though the goal is set, the goal is replacement, but that's going to be 3-4 years. That's something that works very, very well with a neutral entry point into the enterprise, which is typically one of our partner SBCs. And distribution from that SBC on the Avaya estate, multiple ACMs typically, and on Link. That's something that provides both the coexistence management capability, media bypass capability, the granular control of the telco side, given the typical fairly complex and rich network of telco providers that they have and the rules on that side. And given that those customers have made the choice that they're going to move away eventually from Avaya, they are not doing this on ASM. They are not doing it on the Avaya Session Manager. They're doing this on a neutral session management platform. I would say that today, of the very large customers I work with, this is probably, you know, using an SBC in that type of situations, probably at least 2/3, maybe more, of the customer situations. For smaller customers, we see much more of, you know, side by side with SIP trunk, or you know, behind the PBX, or ad hoc, and really that's more of a case by case in that situation.
I wanted to add some color for myself as well. I've seen a fair amount, and honestly, I'm going to go back, date back a little bit. So when we started, or when I started doing this, rather, I used to see a lot of customers honestly put Link behind the PBX or behind the call control system that they originally had. And so PSTN calls, ingress, would come in to the gateway, to the call control system, and then be handed off to Link. And that made, you know, sense for them. They were, that was their comfort level. But more and more, all of those customers, the existing ones and the newer ones that I talk to now, actually want to put both of those systems in parallel and have the gateway front most of that routing for many reasons. There's gateway capability that makes it very easy to be able to do that. And also, it makes no sense for, you know, ingress or outgress calls that are going straight to Link to have to traverse through another call control plane. So that made a lot of sense. And with the introduction of Link 2013 and media bypass, it made it even simpler for that to happen. So I'm seeing a lot of people do that. And there's another inherent advantage of doing that. It's for SIP super easy to do, right? All you're doing is pointing SIP trunks directly to Link for that ingress outgress. But then migration becomes so much easier, right? Getting users over from one call control plane to the other, it becomes so much easier if you've got the gateway sort of doing the routing based on either Active Directory lookups or route failovers or whatever you want to do. It makes it very simple and very, very easy to manage. So you don't have to worry about moving blocks of numbers or blocks of users at a time. You can do it as your organization lets you do it. So I think that's been very successful in my mind.
I've seen all of the above, right? And it's not one size fits all. And it typically depends upon perhaps two or three criteria, right? One is, where are you in your investment cycle around the PBX, right? If it's something that you just made an investment last year, then that guides you towards certain ways over others. The second is, what is the confidence and familiarity around link-wise, right? Now, this can go in combination with one another and give you a specific way to go and approach your scenario. And the third is, what are the business drivers that is part of this decision-making process, right? And the two or three or all of them are kind of interrelated, right? If you had a mobile workforce, I've seen customers who are not so comfortable on link-wise just yet, right, deploy it as a PBX or PSTN capability only for that subset of users. Now that lets them grow confidence and build on, understand what Link is capable of doing and how to manage dial plans, CAC, and whatnot with that. And that gives them an opportunity to find other user profiles which are more suitable to absorb Link. And then before you know, it's not about you then trying to push or, you know, push Link into your user base. It's them asking, right, on what can Link do for me, right? So different approaches. You know, if it's a mobile-first strategy, like I've centered this around right from the beginning, you know, we have the single-client approach, and that's suitable for mobile workers, you know, road warriors who obviously are not going to carry a desk phone in their backpack, right? So all of these coming together kind of gives you a matrix view of how which deployment model to go after. And one interesting scenario is what I've seen in Canada, too. Clive can meet Clive later if you have any questions around this, is how all of these DIDs get managed at the service provider level, right? And you fork the calls to either the PBX system or Link or both in the case of a migratory phase, right? So it has some really neat proven ways of how to, you know, manage the migration, right? And we all know it's not a flash cut in most of these cases. So that's just my thoughts.
I know Jamie asked that question just to get my $10, but there's got to be, oh, there's a question right here. That's excellent.
Any other questions while I run around? Anyone?
Card questions. There's one right here, Jamie.
Well,
feel like I'm at Enterprise Connect.
Oh, there's another one coming?
Oh, my goodness.
You can choose now. All right.
So my take on this is pretty much I'm going to second almost everybody here. But I'm going to take a spin on that, given my experience as me being a hardcore IP network, telecom IP network and telecom guy, it's that comfort. I'm beginning to see that comfort. I think it's about 18 months back we saw that we turned a corner. It was no more a science project. Link was no more a science project of proof of concept stuck in a lab anymore. It's seriously, people started to look at seriously. And I think the confidence level grew when you look at the capabilities of intertrunk routing, session management basically in Link, where you can put the PBX behind it. But the other factors are that people understood that the complexity of managing two call controls together, the sooner they can converge to one call control, the better. So given it's not that they're throwing away, but it's a cost-benefit analysis where I saw. Second thing is that they also take this opportunity with the introduction of Link to do local loop consolidation projects, which they were holding on. So they start looking at how can they go away from TDM interfaces or PRIs to SIP trunking, right? And they combine that and start up a parallel project, which then feeds into this thing. I've also seen very, very large customer with a desire and defining standards and then reassessing their investments, that equipment-less branch. So whether they want to have the local loop in each branch and a single WAN link going to that branch, if that was good enough, or get rid of that PBX and the local loop and put maybe dual WAN links or some kind of a backup WAN link, maybe 3G, 4G sort of a thing, and have Link with a equipment-less sort of a thing. The things which were the confidence-hitting points, one I mentioned, the session management, other was E911, especially enhanced E911, sort of those capabilities, call admission control, all those things when came together, the confidence level grew about 18 months back. And that's where people started to use Link as a, in a more, not equal setting, but also primary call control fashion.
Thank you, Amr. That was excellent. I was just about to have to come over there. You're doing great, though. I appreciate it. there's actually two here that are somewhat interrelated. One is Attendant Console 2013, ? Oh, maybe there's just one ? I know, because I'm the product manager. But another one is somewhat related, is the desktop IP phone an essential part of Link offering? And what do you think are the important features and functions that phones need to and should have? And so what I'm going to do is kind of combine those, right? Oh, and I want to hear about your guys' experience in helping customers with the endpoint question, right? Because clearly there's lots of diversity in endpoints out there today with what we have from our vendors and our partners, SNOM and Audio Codes and Poly, and there's both in terms of functionality and in terms of price, both on the IP phone side and on the attendant side. And I'm just kind of interested in how you guys have had customers kind of work through that from an adoption perspective, and also I think there's a planning question there too. Like, how do you, like, what's the rationale for thinking through what are the right ways to apply devices? One, how do I apply devices? Should I apply devices? And if so, you know, what's kind of the rationale behind that?
Yeah, so you know, my thought, and I'll make a shameless plug at some point during this rant, but my thought is that device selection is super, super personal, right? It's going to depend on a lot of different factors. Comfort level, it's also going to depend on a lot of business value factors. What is really the ROI that you're trying to achieve with this solution? Do you want your ownership of the product or the solution that you're trying to do to be lower? There's choices for that. I personally, I'm not going to talk too much about this because I think everybody understands that not one device fits all, not even 10 devices fit all. But I personally could not be happier with the way that our vendors and our partners are innovating on the device front. I mean, the features that are coming, it seems like every month or so, there's something new to be announced by some of our device manufacturers. And that's really, really exciting for me to see, because there's something different happening all the time. There is a session that I'm doing that talks a little bit about knowing your users and personas in the business value track tomorrow at 1. So if you come there, I'm going to talk a little bit more about the importance of doing that segmentation and what it could mean to your bottom line.
Isn't it interesting how a question on IP phone becomes a response on devices? Yeah, and I think that tells the story. To be very frank, phones are a necessary evil, a possibly necessary, a marginally necessary evil. Thank you very much. And we all understand that there is a world, you know, I don't know if it's 5 years out, 10 years out, where tablets will be significantly cheaper than phones and obviously way more capable. And our mobile capabilities will be so enhanced, already are pretty good, that those things, that question won't even come up for individuals. There's still going to be things such as what happens in my kitchen, what happens, you know, on that intrinsically safe thing that needs to exist in the refinery and on the shop, on the floor shop, those type of things. And that's a place where there's still going to be a need. And that need is very, very well addressed by our partners and will continue to be well addressed by our partners. The vast majority of us should not have a phone, a desktop phone. And if you're investing today, you probably should not consider investing in phones for users. What we've seen in terms of metrics of usage is that even where people are very phone-centric, very quickly after the deployment of both the phone and the soft phone, their usage for most of them, you know, there's exceptions, there's people who really don't get it, don't change, but their usage switches completely to the soft phone, or, and almost entirely completely. Frankly, it's not exactly like our Link Phone Edition based on Windows CE is the most modern thing around either, and I would think twice about, you know, whether that's where I want to put money that might be on the desk for the next 10 or 20 years. So I would really look at this, if I was making the investment, in a very, very careful manner and think much more of the device side than the IP phone side.
To me, the real underlying question there is not whether you need a phone or not, but what is the experience that you want that a phone provides today, right? And when you ask customers during the planning phases, you know, why do your end users want a phone? 9 out of 10 times, the answer I get back is, I need a speakerphone capability that's built into the IP phone, right? I don't want to be on those 30-minute, hour-long calls, hanging on to my peripheral device or whatever the case may be. I just want this hands-free speakerphone capability, right? So once you get to that level of granularity around what the user expectations are, I think then you find the right solution. You don't start with what the solution is and then you craft a question around it, right? It's really around what you need. If you want a speakerphone quality and if it wants to fit into your backpack and whatnot, based on that, I think there are ways to navigate this. And for a fraction of what a typical, you know, desk phone costs, you may be able to fit a user with both a speakerphone and a, you know, peripheral device that is either wired or wireless and whatnot, right? So options are very many. I think he's going to cover that in this user selection and persona effort.
As the person on the stage with the Twitter handle, no more phones, it was wonderful to actually hear my colleagues go and articulate through this. And I was purposefully a little controversial in selecting that a few years ago, because that's clearly our vision, right? And it's a vision that we are going to have devices that are multifunctional, that are highly mobile, that are highly connected, and that will give us lots and lots of capabilities. And when we look kind of back on this time period of dramatic change to mobility and dramatic change to cloud and these dramatic kind of forces that Gurdeep so eloquently talked about earlier today, you know, I think we're going to look back and kind of feel a little silly, especially today when you can buy tablets like that for a lot less than the price of the you know, very sophisticated IP phones that are out there. Yeah, absolutely. Appreciate your guys' comments. And Amr has the mic. So, Amr, you absolutely have an opportunity to comment on this, and then you will get the next question as well.
So I was going to share my experience with Sinead and I had back in 2006, 2007. My ex-employer, we launched this IP telephony pilot, about 800 user transatlantic, half here, half in Weehawken, New Jersey, and half in Zurich. To our, so very first thing, which was part of that requirement form, that is that, hey, the advisory board said that we want some click-to-call mobility thing. What that meant by was a soft. And we had no idea how many people would go, how much would we plan for soft phone and how many for desk phone. I went to the vendors. They didn't have any idea, too. Cisco, Avaya, Nortel, part of this thing. You know what? We took 80-20 rule. 80% desk phone, 20% soft phone. In 2006, to my surprise, 60% opted for soft phone. It was amazing. So that tells the story that people are there. It's actually the telecom people, the voice people, sometimes assume that the people are going to need desk phone. Well, I think I'm going to second what Francois was saying earlier, that you should not be investing in it. But let's suppose that there is a use case and you need to invest in a phone. Now, let me give you specification of a phone. You go and figure out that phone. It should be color screen. It should have the access to the corporate directory, not to the PBX directory, with photo, actual presence enabled card, right? It should have two-port switch in it. With the color screen and everything, it should be class 2, not class 3. It's not, when I did for that, for One Finsbury Avenue in UK for 3,500 people, it was $4 million upgrade of the PDUs and electrical infrastructure all the way to the public utility, right? So that's, you need to understand what's going on here. It should be, have access to your calendar. It should give you a single touch to join your conference. It's an IP phone, right? And on top of it, the MSRP should be less than $300.
It sounds like the tablet that Tamor is holding in his hand.
So
How convenient.
I'm going to leave it.
Certainly a lot more portable. we honestly didn't.
So I'm going to leave it with this thought. And the last piece I want to add is, and probably he's going to more elaborate on this in his session. And I'm when I look at the profile of the users, and I had this with conversation with multiple customers, it was actually seen by the customers, the planning team, as they were trying to measure the risk in the investment, that how many people would like to have IP phone. And the idea was that, oh, overwhelming majority, like I thought 80% would like the IP phone. So the way I did it, that if you look at the profile, you have about anywhere from 10 to 15%, usually 10%, your executives or managers. Assume that they would need that. You know, they'll need soft phone and a desk phone as well. 10% is your common area phone. Those are going to be the phones. Right? So the middle portion, which is 80%, and I missed some, you know, I'm not counting contact center agents, I'm not talking, you know, attendant and all this. The 80% of the workers, 50% of that 80%, we don't care that there's headset, they would be okay with the headset.
This is where we disagree again. Don't give it to executives. They're already trouble. Given to them, there'll be more trouble.
So
I love it.
So from that 50% who are asking for a phone, I'll humbly submit to you that out of those 50, out of this 40%, if 50% don't care, it connects in RJ45 or USB. They are just looking for an instrument that the way they were used to it. I'm actually among those of those. So if you do the math, overall, you probably are going to be about 25% of the user population or 30% of the user population to begin with asking for the IP phone. And now that's how you start working backwards and you figure out what your requirements were.
Awesome, guys. Appreciate all the commentary. We have one more question card here, and I think I'll be kind to Amr, and I'll take this one. So the person that asked this isn't able, it shouldn't answer this question, but I'm going to ask the audience, did you guys have more swag to give away? Do you have one more? Okay. So does the person, besides the person who wrote this question, does anybody in here in this audience know what the following acronym stands for? BFCP. Is there anyone in this audience who knows what this acronym stands for?
We'll get $10.
Baker, Frank, Charlie, Peter.
Does it stand for Baker, Frank, Charlie, Peter?
It does not stand for Baker, Frank, Charlie, Peter. No one here knows that. That's fascinating. BFCP is the Binary Flow Control Protocol floor control, not flow control. I came from the SDN session a couple hours ago. Binary floor control protocol. And it's the protocol that is used by Cisco when you're sharing screens, when you're doing content sharing. And the question was, are you guys going to do BFCP? Great, great topic to go and take to our link feedback sessions that, as you know, are happening after the session at the same time as Ask the Experts. We haven't made any announcements around BFCP support. One of the things that we're instead working really, really hard to do is to make sure that every possible type of client has the capability to have every possible type of sharing capability. So as you saw today in our keynote, lots of mobile clients getting lots more sharing facilities. We've had this on the Link web app now with 2013, getting on more and more mobile clients, and that's where we're really focusing a lot of our engineering effort, not just to be able to see somebody's screen, but to be able to interact with somebody's screen as well. It's kind of handy to be able to take control or prevent people from taking control or take back control, all things that don't exist in BFCP. So any other questions that I have missed that are out there? Yes, indeed. Oh, are you going to come to the microphone? Thank you so much. We appreciate that very much. And I'm going to give this to the person who is least expecting it, and that would be...
So I have two questions, and I'll start with the easy one, which is, I'd like to hear more about your WebRTC strategy.
Time. Talk about the strategy.
I'll throw the second one out so you have time to think about it. I used to talk to end users, and I'd ask them what features they wanted, and it was a cluster, because I'd end up getting things like, I want headsets that don't mess up my hairstyle. So more recently, I started asking customers, how do you want to communicate with people? And as we've started to stretch that question a little bit, a couple of things started to come up. And one is that, you know, when they do want to federate, and they do want to talk to other businesses, and they do want other people to contact them, and they do want Skype. So they want all of these features that we offer. But they also spend a lot of their time going from Link to their cell phone so that they can text all of those other people who aren't in the system and won't be in the system because they're customers of them. So what I'm seeing more and more is a requirement to communicate, you know, with the rest of the world. And I'm wondering, do you have any sense of whether you'll ever consider having Link either register to a public CSCF or some other IMS type functionality so that you can reach the rest of the world?
Let me say a few words on the WebRTC piece, if I may. It's probably not a question about a protocol, it's a question about a functionality. And the functionality is to be able to reach out to people who are using a very simple interface without having to do much or anything on their device, so browser in particular, and to be able to interact with them with rich media. Earlier today, you saw that, actually. And it so happens it was not WebRTC, but it was something very, very similar from an experience point of view. Now, with respect to WebRTC, I happen to be part of the WebRTC working group in Redmond, which is why I cannot volunteer on this. But Microsoft is part of WebRTC, and we are supporting it, and we're part of those efforts. At the same time, there's significant complexities and limitations in the current drafts, and so we're trying to improve that. What we're trying to work with a substantial industry group could probably be called WebRTC 2, and which is kind of... a substantial improvement. Microsoft has substantially contributed to WebRTC already, in particular in the audio space, audio codecs, and so on. So we're actually very well armed as WebRTC over the next probably 2-3 years, probably not before that, becomes more of a reality. And we actually believe that we'll be probably amongst the first ones to be natively ready. But we don't think that's going to be instant. There's a period of time for a lot of things, including infrastructure. I mean, there's still even some Windows XP out there, yeah? for infrastructure to be ready, but also for standards to be ready. So in parallel with that, we're continuing to improve what we do in Link and between Link and Skype. That is not WebRTC today, but could easily become WebRTC or WebRTC 2 or whatever it is as that becomes a reality. As you know, we have media capabilities on browsers, on mobile devices, and so on. As we saw this morning, we're increasing those. We believe that will fulfill the functional needs. And as WebRTC becomes a reality, clearly we've actually already committed to adopting it, and we're already part of the standardization process.
So a couple of things on this, which I've based on a lot of conversation with engineering and also with my customers. First of all, so what I'm adding on to what Francois has already said, that if WebRTC itself, as in, so Derek Burney said 2 years back on the keynote in the VoiceCon in Enterprise Connect, that as it becomes, we are contributing the standard, as it becomes standards, we will work on it. And in the absence, he demonstrated this morning. Now, think in this term. WebRTC essentially is very little to do with web to begin with. Think in this term. I think what Francois was alluding to, it's all about mobile SDKs. More than 50% of the web traffic is, internet traffic is coming through devices, mobile devices. And out of that, 80% is coming from apps, not from the browser. I would love to have that traffic from the browser because I can monopolize that desktop piece. I would love that. Second thing is, I have actually customers who had put me on spot first that, hey, you do not have that shared line appearances, boss admin scenarios the way I want to do on the traditional PB access, really grill me. And I'm trying to explain that, hey, if you look at the use case by use case scenario, we probably meet it, but was not able to satisfy that particular person. And then the next thing turned around and says, what about your WebRTC scenario strategy? So, and I'm like, what is the use case? Are you gonna do this boss admin through web? You're gonna do that? You see where I'm coming from? The point is, in my humble opinion, it's all about mobile SDK and enabling its mobile apps. So the term WebRTC sometimes itself is deceiving. So you have to understand that what it means. And that's what, so when Ether channels were required, but CDP was required and LLDP was not available, Cisco didn't wait for it. Or when EIGRP was delivered, you know, OSPF was delivered, and OISIS, you see what I'm talking about? Standards bodies take their time, you have to negotiate, come together. So ahead of that, we are delivering that innovation, and that was what demonstrated today, that you can have voice and video support in the web. That was demonstrated by us today.
Excellent. Thank you, Robert. So there was a second part of the question as well, which was, and I apologize if I paraphrase inappropriately, effectively being able to have the ability to send and receive SMS from the link client. Is that a good way to characterize it? Yeah. Clearly not available today. Some interesting third-party solutions that you can glom onto there. We could have a whole alcohol-infused conversation about the role of the carriers in the way that they have been able to monetize SMS. I don't know why there isn't a 1,000-foot statue for the person who came up with the idea of taking 140 characters and charging the amount of money that the carriers have done for transmitting those 140 characters when it didn't actually cost the carriers any money to do that, because that was spare bits within their signaling protocol, and you effectively monetized that for somewhere in the neighborhood of $2 trillion, which I think is just, from a pure product management perspective, is like the holy grail, right?
What have you done?
Anybody can actually, you know, top that.
I thought you would do something similar for us.
This has been, you know, since back in the 2007 days, this is something that we've been looking at. I think there's a lot of economic forces that make that difficult, but it's not something that we're you know, necessarily interested in dropping to look at it like that. But it's not anything that we have anything. It's not any particular capability we have to announce today. And with that, we have about 8 more minutes left before we can all go have beers and do Ask the Experts and do the link feedback session. So if there was one more
question. There's a question here, I think.
Oh, excellent. Thank you so much.
Back to the attendant console question. So you guys talked about devices and going back to the soft client. A lot of the clients we've done 2010 to 2013 migrations is asking around, is there an attendant console coming for 2013?
There's not an attendant console coming for 2013 because the 2010 attendant console is still supported in 2013. That's one of the kind of things that we really take seriously, is the idea that back compatibility, interestingly enough, that backwards compatibility in our engineering organization is actually characterized as interoperability. They look at that as a set of interoperability matrices to make sure that things like 2007 and 2007 R2 can still have, you know, sets of capabilities along with 2010 and 2013. The 2010 attendant console operates just fine against the 2013 server, just in the same way that Link Phone Edition 2010 operates just fine against the 2013 server. When we start thinking about the next release, that's absolutely something that we need to look at, whether we put some more dollars into the attendant console and make it different, make it better, make it whatever the case may be, or if that's something that we look at and say, you know, the market's kind of moved on to kind of completely partner-based solutions, and maybe that's the direction that we should go. I'd like to turn it to my August panel, though, and see what have you guys seen from customers in real life at scale who have a need for attendant solutions? Like, what are some of the things they've done?
Certainly, we've seen a lot of changes in the market in terms of availability of partner solutions. In my experience, the vast majority of the customers who deploy attendant consoles already had attendant consoles, typically already had vendors in place, already had relationships in place, like those relationships. The richness of those solutions far exceeds what we are able to do in short term. So I'm seeing mostly people use those partner solutions. And that's one of the reasons, because we are very comfortable both in Link 2010 attendant console working against Link 2013, but also in our partner solutions, that we're looking at this as, you know, a field in which there is not necessarily an immediate perception that we have a problem. So if that's wrong, we should know that.
Yeah, I handed the mic to Raj.
That's right. Second, everything you said on partner solutions, but this is one place where maybe that is the need for a desk phone based attendant console with sidecars, right? And that is, you know, that's a way. Again, those are you know, people manning those stations, you know, handle a large volume of calls and whatnot. So there is a training aspect associated with that. There is a speed of doing certain things in a hardware fashion, right? That doesn't quite translate into clicks, right? For very specific niche scenarios. So perhaps, you know, desk phones, maybe, you know, the 10% of desk phones you need to factor in, right, in your deployment may include this, along with side cards. That's, you know, a lot of our fantastic hardware vendors make.
Yeah, there's also occasionally lots of persons with disabilities handling the switchboard and so on, and they're very special switchboards, and so, again, very specialized solutions.
Correct. Yeah, that's all I got. Questions? We are within the 5-minute mark.
Yeah, so I think your question is kind of two-part, if I may say so. You know, one is around policies around cameras and what's allowed and who's allowed to do video and so on, and the other's around sort of more system monitoring, troubleshooting, and that kind of stuff. So certainly, you know, we have, if I take a look back even 1 year from now and where we've come, we've really advanced things that we can do from a monitoring perspective. So, you know, Link's got, you know, SCOM's got a pack that you can add on. You can do all the monitoring piece there. We've built monitoring server right into Link, front end role, so you can provide a lot of monitoring there from a reporting perspective. And then if you look at some of our monitoring solutions that our partners are doing, I think Audio Codes has got a great solution that they're showcasing, and HP's got a great one. And if you talk about the SDN API that Jamie had a great session on this morning, that's really, you know, very, very cutting edge, right? I mean, if you take a look at things like looking at what is happening in call flows in real time and being able to report that to network controllers to say, this is when the call started and this is when it ended and here's some more information about the codec and so on, that's absolutely fantastic. So think about wireless companies and networking companies and the things that they could do with that to enable sort of on the network piece. And then from an infrastructure piece, SCOM certainly is the tool that you're going to use to be able to take a look at all of these things from a holistic point of view, to be able to manage your infrastructure, make sure everything is healthy, and provide that. And then certainly there's add-on functionality that we're going to be able to provide from that. Policies is a little bit different. And it's actually very interesting that you mentioned that. And it's good feedback, right? So we don't, in this new world of BYOD, we're not sort of limiting device capability and managing that to the device level. And we can. There are ways that we can do that today. But the question is, do we want to do that, right? The question is, do we want to allow a user that, you're on your desktop or your laptop, your company-approved laptop, so you have X number of capabilities, but now that you have your own device, you don't have those capabilities. That's a broken user experience from our perspective. I'm on the side of saying, if you as an administrator trust that user to provide video, then you trust them to provide video across the gamut of devices. You can certainly disable video for that particular user. And then that's not to say that there's not additional capabilities, like for example, if they're outside of your organization, you can actually stop them from doing video and so on. There's other granularities that you can actually provide, but you need to understand, again, user personas and what they can and cannot do. I hope that sort of touched your concern.
That was a great question, because it actually caused me to have a very different response in my mind than Tamor's, and so it's excellent because it kind of found a cleavage, right? So what came to my mind was, we're iterating so fast on the mobile side and really focusing on providing as much capability in the mobile platforms as we can, that we're then backfilling from that a set of administrative policy, OANM type functions that are coming up later. To the extent like we're saying, hey, think about desktop sharing and video and voice on packet, on your mobile device, on your tablet, and all these things. And then we're having these conversations with lots of customers, and customers are coming up and saying, wow, that's awesome and super powerful, and how can we do a 2FA-based auth on that device? Because that's a super powerful device that if it only has a single mode of authentication, then we've got to think about it. Or maybe there are use cases where, you know, as Tamor's characterizing, this could be, you know, perceived as a broken experience, or it could be perceived as, I have the ability to take the tablet the size of that Tamor has into the secure room and take pictures or, you know, transmit live video surreptitiously that isn't possible from a workstation. And maybe I do want to have that policy. That type of matrixed policy engine could be really, really powerful, or could be really, really sophisticated and complex and hard to manage, right? In short, I think that there is a path that we're following right now where we're racing ahead from a feature perspective, and then we get feedback from our users and from our customers that help us understand what are the aspects of control and policy and OANM that we need to ensure to make to, that we need to have in the product in order to make sure that it's supportable, that it's scalable, and that it's enterprise class.
Shameless plug, the session I had just before was in part devoted to those questions of mobility, access, control, and security, and so on. So you can watch the recording. And I think we're over time, actually.
We are over time. Thank you all so much for coming. If this is valuable, give us feedback. Tell us that. If it wasn't, do the same. Give us feedback and tell us that. Because we want to be able to make this conference as valuable as possible for you. And we will see you all at Ask the Experts or the Link Feedback Sessions. Thank you.